the ideas, the leaders, the lives that are shaping Denmark and the world. From Blox Hub in Copenhagen, Denmark, with your co-hosts, Ed Lay and Thomas Mulhern, this is Global Denmark.
Hello and welcome back to the Global Denmark podcast, where we explore how thought leaders and innovators are working to create a better Denmark and a better world. Well, we have a special edition where former Ambassador Rufus Gifford was by the studio again, thinking he was going to enjoy a nice vacation in Denmark. That quickly changed as President Trump canceled his state visit to Denmark abruptly. We were able to get Rufus into the studio to discuss Trump's cancellation, what that meant in terms of normal diplomatic protocol, why we cannot just allow this to be the new normal, if allies really should discuss everything, trying to understand Donald Trump's tactics, character, mental health and public service, the current situation going into 2020, and much more. Without further ado, we give you Rufus Gifford. We are back. I am here as always with my co-host, Mr. Ed Lay. Ed, looking good. How are you feeling?
Thank you very much. I hadn't expected a compliment so soon. I'm great. Really excited to get started.
And Ambassador Gifford, Rufus, how are you, sir?
I'm good. It's great. I'm on vacation in Denmark for the week, and it got to be a little bit more adventurous than I would have thought. But actually, a really, I think, good and sort of important week to be here too. So it's been fun. It's always great to be back.
Yeah, I saw that you were originally coming here to celebrate Stephen's 50th birthday.
Yeah, 60th birthday, which is terrifying. Oh, he looks like he's 40, but he looks younger than I do. But.
And Pride, how was that?
It was good. I mean, Pride was, it's always wonderful. I think it's, for me, I participated in three Prides as ambassador, and those were some of the more meaningful days of my ambassadorship for a whole bunch of different reasons. And so as an ex-ambassador, it's a little bit weird, but I still love it. It's wonderful. And just, being able to be on the streets and see so many friends is special.
So obviously you didn't plan your itinerary with Trump canceling the state visit,
no.
But you've landed in this diplomatic shitstorm, mm-hmm. basically. First of all, you're not the current ambassador to Denmark, obviously. Mm-hmm. But does one ever stop being an ambassador between Denmark and the United States?
I certainly don't. I think that's for a couple of reasons. One is, obviously, I have very strong opinions about the relationship between the U.S. and Denmark. And this is not – the way I live my life is that I never want to close one chapter of my life entirely. So, and especially if something was as meaningful to me as my time here. So I will always be an advocate for this relationship somehow. And whether or not people want me to, it's not something that I get paid to do. But I think in weeks like this where – you're hearing only one message coming out of the United States, and that message is what I believe to be an un-American, chaotic message that does not pay – it doesn't pay any respect to the long-lasting relationship between the United States and Denmark that I think I have a responsibility, at least to an American audience, to explain why this is so profoundly wrong. And so I think – it matters. It matters still. And so if I have the ability to talk about U.S.-Denmark and why this whole chapter, last couple of weeks, is so such a shame, then I'll keep doing it.
You mentioned in one of your interviews on CNN being surprised that the Danes weren't shocked enough. Could you elaborate a little?
Yeah, I think this is the part of... this is the part of it that makes me saddest about the last kind of 36 hours. And putting this in context, right? And so this was a state visit. So we have not had an American president visit Denmark in an official capacity like this, as an official state visit, since Bill Clinton in 1997. So what, 22 years ago, a long time. And so it's a big deal. And the kind of pomp and circumstance surrounded that visit is a big deal. And so everything from the military to the royal household. I mean, spending money, spending hour after hour, getting everything ready and pulling the plug on it, pulling out. And doing it by tweet, mind you, quick canceling by tweet, like he does so much, is an insult. And the reason I'm leading with that is because if Ronald Reagan had done that, if Bill Clinton had done that, if George W. Bush had done that, if Barack Obama had done that, I think it would have been this sort of profound royal scandal locally. I mean, but it would have been considered to be a real snub. And understandably, I think the Danes would have been really offended by it. I think the challenge I have with the response, and I'm not surprised by it, the response is sort of of course he did. Sort of he's sort of an eye roll and a shrug and be like, he's just Donald Trump. It's what you expect of him. Mm. So my point in this is that there used to be very, very high expectations for American presidents, that the idea that you stuck to your word, if you committed to something, you did it. Unless, of course, you had a very, very good excuse, especially when it came to an ally who's been as loyal to us as Denmark has. And so to me, the fact that Danes responded as a, oh, it's fine that he's not coming, we don't care, and it's not particularly surprising to us that this was handled the way it was, it's just, I think for most Americans, it should be very, very sad. And to think how quickly the American brand has fallen in 2.5 years, how the expectations for our government the expectations have fallen. And I think that's too bad. That is not leadership.
Trump said the prime minister made a nasty comment to him and the American people by calling the idea of buying Greenland absurd. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, where do you start? I mean, it's so funny. It's I think...
Yeah, how do we unpack that?
I know, exactly. It's just sort of a nasty comment. If only this man could look himself in the mirror and understand what is nasty and what is not. I mean, this is a man that has called American inner cities rat-infested places where no one wants to live. If that is not... It has belittled American congresswomen, trashed them publicly, and retweeted white nationalists and xenophobes around the world. I mean, that is nasty. That is nasty. Calling the intention, again, put forward on leaked and then put forward on Twitter and then as part of news conferences, that the desire to buy such a critically important part of this kingdom, absurd. I mean, it is what it is. It is absurd. The idea that he thinks he can negotiate his way out of this, that everything, or it's worse, it's the idea that he thinks everything is for sale, that everything should be open to him, is just not the way the world works. This is the world, foreign policy, diplomacy, it's not just about dollars and cents. It's not just about money. Not everything in the world is for sale, Donald Trump. And absurd, that's a nasty word. The man needs to look himself in the mirror, honestly. If there isn't a personality disorder of some sort there, you'll get into that, I'm sure. But I mean, there's so little self awareness on the part of Donald Trump, and I even think his most ardent supporters would laugh when he calls Mette Frederiksen absurd. Considering what he has said historically.
So obviously, Trump made his visit here contingent upon talking about the sale of Greenland, which, you know, it seems to be a negotiation tactic he's employed in other matters. I heard an interview with the current United States ambassador here in Denmark who said that as allies, we should be able to discuss everything, implicit in that including the sale of Greenland.
Mm-hmm.
What is your comment?
Well, listen, do I think that we should be able to discuss everything? Sure, absolutely. That doesn't mean that that doesn't mean that everything is on the table. I mean, it's just, so can you imagine if I don't, it doesn't matter what country. If Russia, which would be more scandalous, would just say someone. If Australia decided they wanted to come visit the United States, but they said we want to buy Alaska or Hawaii. I guess that's a little bit closer, but we want to buy Hawaii. And I guarantee you the president of the United States would say, we are not selling Hawaii.
That's absurd. That is,
it's an American state. Yeah. We're not selling it.
Yeah.
And so you can talk about it all you want, but it's not for sale. And so then the Australian, you know, president, prime minister, it would say, oh, I'm not coming because you're not willing to sell me Hawaii. And no, it's just that, again, sure, discuss everything if you want, but also understand that not everything is for sale. Foreign policy, this is these critically important alliances, again, it's not about money. It's not about dollars and cents. Not all of it is for sale. When you think about Greenland, it's not just what he calls a giant real estate transaction. It's not. It's 50-plus thousand people. It's rich culture. It's thousands of years of going back to Viking history in the kingdom here. It is. I mean, think about it, too. It's not just. I mean, Denmark is a monarchy. They are, even though Greenland has home rule, there is tension between Copenhagen and Nuuk. They are a very proud part of the monarchy. They love the queen. They love Frederick and Mary. So there's rich history here. So it's not just this. It's not just the dollars. It's not just the price tag. I find it. All of it is, you know, I do think good allies should be able to have a conversation about anything. I do agree with that. But you also have to set ground rules. And I think, backing up a little bit, one of the reasons why I think Donald Trump has really unraveled traditional diplomacy is before any visit like this. So, for example, we did a Nordic state dinner in one of the final months of my ambassadorship. And the months of pre-planning for that visit were intense. We had, because not only did we have Denmark, we had Sweden, Norway, Finland, and Iceland. And the amount of pre-planning that went into a visit like that to ensure that we had deliverables that every country could work together on. So this was long before anyone was declaring victory on anything. That back behind the scenes work should be happening for months and months and months. And so no one is ever put in this situation with traditional diplomacy, meaning no one is ever put. If this was the Obama administration and they had this really stupid idea that we wanted to buy Greenland, what would have happened is this. Some mid-level person at the State Department would have said, listen, or at the White House, would have come to our embassy and they would have said, listen, the president has this desire to talk to the Danes about Greenland. So that would have happened behind the scenes before the public got involved, before it became this enormous issue on Twitter and front and leading the pages of the Wall Street Journal, right? What would have happened is that idea would have been shot down in the mid-level, in those mid-level conversations. So no one would have been embarrassed, in essence. No one would have been put on defensive the way that Mette Frederiksen and Kim Kielsen were put on defensive. And the U.S. doesn't look stupid for being essentially told that their idea is dumb, which is true. So this is why, again, traditional diplomacy does work. Yeah. And he's thrown out all the rules. And that's a huge problem.
Is it just a complete indifference to anything?
I think it is. I think that the Trump administration has a complete disdain for anything that happened before them, in essence. Okay. And I find that you see this an issue, and it's in particular the Obama administration, of course. So, you know, whether we're talking the Iran deal, the Paris Climate Agreement, and so many other things, you see a desire to unravel everything Barack Obama did. And it is more than that. I mean, he doesn't just take on Democrats. He's gone after the traditional approach of president after president after president, and including Republicans like George W. Bush and Ronald Reagan.
Well, how does that affect you? I mean, you build up for 4 years. You work tirelessly to, you know, help cultivate Obama's message over here, build up relations. Do you see it unraveling, or do you think the foundation you put in place can withstand this?
I don't want to take credit for the foundation. I think the foundation far predates me, but I did work I worked tirelessly to ensure that these connections and not just as we've spoken about before, not just the kind of the government to government connection, which is going to be there regardless, but the human connection. Yeah. And the good thing about Trump, it's very hard to me to point to a good thing about Donald Trump. Not truly, and that makes me depressed, but it's true. I think one thing I've learned from this experience, having been in Denmark during this diplomatic incident, is that Danes love the United States. They may not love our president. You know, they didn't love, say, George W. Bush, especially in the second term. They certainly don't love Donald Trump. But they still love Americans. They love the United States for what we have stood for historically.
They differentiate.
They do. They have the ability to differentiate, I think. And that is, in some ways, what I try to represent, the United States that Danes love, and not the ugly American version that Donald Trump represents. I kind of the ostentatious, greedy, arrogant version that Donald Trump represents, and because I think the vast majority of Americans are not that, and so that's the story that I try to tell. It's the relationships that I built here, and so that's a story I continue to try to tell.
Let's play a little hypothetical.
Yeah,
President Obama had done this mm-hmm. while you were the ambassador. First of all, what could you have done to mitigate the damage, and how would you have communicated to the Danish people?
Yeah, and when you say ask the question, you mean like canceling a state dinner?
Correct.
For the just exactly the
exact situation.
Yeah.
Unlikely.
I told you strategically why it would never have happened, because even if they had the idea, we would have killed it at the mid-level before it ever became public.
Right.
If he had canceled the state dinner, and I'm sure I was never part of them, but I'm sure that there were times where the Obamas canceled overseas trips for a variety of different reasons. And I'm certain that there were times, and I'm sure the reasons were quite good, actually. But that doesn't mean that the host government, the country you're going to, doesn't get offended that it happens anyway.
Yeah.
And the role of an ambassador in that role is to be the face of the United States very openly and constantly out there. And I would have done every opportunity. I would have tried to be on television and in the media as much as possible, because what's happening right now is the narrative is spinning out of control. If you look at the front page of every single newspaper in Denmark this morning, it's some sort of caricature of Donald Trump, and the anti-American, or it's not really anti-American again, it's more anti-Trump narrative, is very overwhelming here. And the only way to counter that is to put a human face on this. And because right now it's a caricature, because it is offensive. Everything he did is offensive, and it's indefensible. So what I would do is not change people's minds about Donald Trump. That will never, ever happen. But to try to talk about an America that Danes can understand and appreciate and love. And I go back, and I can't remember if we've talked about this in previous interviews, but again, my predecessor, two before me, was Jim Kaine. I don't know if you ever met him. He had a hard job, in the sense that he represented the United States in the second term of Bush. So this is kind of the tough years of Iraq, when this, you know, after all no weapons of mass destruction, all that. And George W. Bush was massively unpopular in Denmark. He did a really good job, I think, acknowledging off the bat, and I've been told this by lots of people, that, listen, I know you don't necessarily love the politics of my president, but I tell you, I know you still love the United States, and focusing on that. And he would... And then on the other side, the sort of public diplomacy side, he did bike tours around the country. He showed his appreciation and love of Denmark, and I think he dealt with a situation that was very complex in a way that was very open and smart. And so I have respect for that. I had the enormous luxury of being here during the presidency of someone who is absolutely beloved in Denmark. So I didn't have to fight that. I could go to every university and every gymnasium and take open questions, and I'd still get criticized from time to time, definitely. But ultimately, it was positive, so it was different.
Yeah.
But I would. I mean, if I would be out there, I would be out there a lot, and you'd be seeing a whole bunch of me. Yeah.
I want to talk a little bit about something that you touched on there, the Trump effect, where if you add Trump into an equation, suddenly something that is absurd to everybody else seems like a normal thing. And maybe what that perhaps gets him, and everything that I've seen in the media, is either Trump is a bumbling idiot, or as Scott Adams says, the creator of Dilbert, Trump is a genius. He asks for the whole farm when he only wants a pig, or he uses smoke and mirrors to distract from the thing that he's doing. I mean, can you talk a little bit about that? I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, so there, I have in my head gone back and forth as to whether or not Donald Trump is a branding and marketing genius. I think there's part of it from a brand standpoint. That the problem is that this is before he was president. From a brand standpoint, he was a genius. He's not a good businessman, but he is a branding genius. I mean, he is was able to market, in essence, his last name and build an empire off of it. And some of that was smoke and mirrors, and some of it was real. But he was very effective at it. I don't see this. The reason why I don't buy the argument that he is a marketing genius or a branding genius is because people. So this is just the facts. He should be cruising to re-election right now. He has a 3.8 unemployment rate, and he's an incumbent president. The economy now, admittedly, the economy is teetering, perhaps, and we could be heading towards a recession. But right now, he should have a 10-point lead over his Democratic opponent because the economy is good and he is an incumbent, right? Same thing that happened to Ronald Reagan, same thing that happened to Bill Clinton, same thing that happened even to Barack Obama, that the economy was trending in the right way. And he's losing. Recent polls show him down to Joe Biden by 12 points. Why is that? Because people don't like him. They think he's chaotic. They think he is an unsteady hand. They think he's rude and obnoxious, and they don't like him as a human being. So, to me, all the people who say he's a branding genius, but builds no loyalty amongst average people or the majority of people, I don't buy it. I just don't buy it. I don't see how it's real. This whole argument that. Which I've answered on TV a couple times the last couple of days, which is, well, isn't this whole Greenland thing a distraction? That he's just putting up a sideshow, right? But I don't buy that either. Well, this is why. I mean, I can't answer that question specifically. I think he wants to buy Greenland. I don't think any of that is fake. Yeah. But I actually don't. If it is a distraction, it's terrible politics. Any distraction that makes the United States look weaker on the world stage is not helpful to the United States nor him personally. I mean, if you take this, you take a step back from this situation, what happened was Donald Trump had an idea. It was rejected emphatically by the Kingdom of Denmark. He sort of said, okay, I'm not coming anyway. He just sort of like cried and went away. You know, it was sort of had his little temper tantrum and went away. I don't see how that's a positive distraction. No one's laughing. No one's. It's the headlines in the United States are not positive for him. Maybe his supporters still stand by him. I think they do, but I don't know how many independent voters you win by saying you want to be say you want to buy Greenland, get rejected by the Prime Minister and the Greenlanders, then cancel the trip, and they get ridiculed in the world stage. I don't know why that's a positive distraction. So all of this talk about this kind of larger Machiavellian personality that he has and that he's this genius, I just don't buy it. I don't. But look, I will say he does have the remarkable ability to shape a narrative. So meaning, and when I say shape a narrative, I mean he can tweet and all of a sudden that's what everyone's talking about next. But I don't I just think that the tweets don't serve him positively. And of course, I mean, to back to your question, I was saying that I work so hard in this relationship. Yeah. And to see it treated this way is so personally offensive to me. Yeah. That I just don't have anything positive to say about him.
Can you call President Obama and just have a...
Well, all I say today is
group therapy session.
Well, it's so true. It's like, you know, right? He's, well, he, as I say today, is, well, at least one American president will be here in September. You know, still wants to come to Denmark in September. I just, you know, but it is a tough time. I think that we've got to call it for what it is. And I think so. Traditional diplomatic protocol would tell you that former ambassadors do not engage in politics the way that I am. And I think it is a scary time in American history. And if I were to sit quiet, to me, it's complicit. And I refuse to be complicit with this administration. And I think silence is the worst. Is the absolute worst to be silent in this time is the worst thing that I could be. So I know I'll get criticized for it, and I really don't care.
Silence takes away the abnormality of the time and makes it the new normal.
That's right. That is right. And I think we have to call out the outrage for what it is. And
I want to pivot a little bit.
Yeah.
And talk a little bit about character and the kind of the American image in light of this. Sam Harris on his Making Sense podcast. Mm-hmm. I had this to say. Trump strikes me as a distillation of everything that is wrong with the American character. If you take our materialism and our ignorance about life, the rest of the world, and our satisfaction in our ignorance, our overconfidence, our pretension to greatness, even when we're actually being merely petty, our vanity, our sexism, boorishness, narcissism, a kind of childishness that doesn't even have the virtues of childhood, a kind of malignant childhood that is just a boastfulness and me, 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 without any of the curiosity or sympathy that you meet in actual children. He is the living embodiment of the American grotesque.
Yeah.
And I'm curious, first of all, comment on that.
Yeah.
At what point does Trump's behavior spill out until how the world views Americans? And what can you do to prevent
that? I'm going to answer your question, but this I could answer the question from years ago. I always thought Donald Trump was the embodiment of the American grotesque. It's, you know, when he came on television in the 90s, I remember my dad throwing something at the TV and turning it off and calling him a fraud of a businessman, that no one would want to do business with. My dad was a businessman, a banker. And, you know, he'd always talk about how no bank would ever lend Donald Trump money because it was a black hole.
Only Deutsche Bank.
Yeah, exactly. No American bank, truthfully. And because he was so arrogant, he was so full of himself, he put his name on everything. And I grew up in this kind of Yankee culture, which is very similar in some ways to the kind of culture of Yantelaw.
Yeah.
So it's this. I grew up in a place where you didn't drive flashy cars, you didn't put label, you didn't wear clothes with labels, you didn't any of that, and you didn't brag. And so the idea of Donald Trump was very, very counter to the culture that I grew up in. So I always felt like this was the walking gross, he is the embodiment of the ugly American. I always thought that. That being said, I could see the entertainment value in him. You know, he was entertaining to listen to. He would say things that were provocative and shocking, but it didn't really have particularly high stakes, right? I mean, he really cared. He was a, you know, sort of this showman and not much more. And then, but you translate that to the presidency, when you actually have real power and real influence and real ability and the need to be the moral leader of the world, and not the world, but certainly the country and in many instances the world, that's where it becomes just no. I have many, many friends who have young kids and just sort of shake their heads. Yeah, I mean, it's the idea of turning off your TV when the president of the United States comes on television because you're not sure what he's going to say. You're not sure what offensive thing he's going to say about X group of people, whether it's people from Baltimore or Muslims or whatever it is. And it used to be that presidents were bigger than that, and this one is not. So I think that's really, really tragic. But that being said, I will say this. Not to overstate the concern, because I think that stereotype of the ugly American has been around forever, and certainly since I was here, my job, this is the hardest part ever, is because my job I thought when I was ambassador is to make people's definition of what it meant to be American more nuanced. That we weren't all sort of arrogant cowboys, kind of. And that we had lots of different opinions about various issues. We weren't all gun owners. We weren't all, you know, we weren't all Second Amendment guys, you know. Yeah. And then you sort of, we elect the walking embodiment of that. And that's, so it is hard. But I think that that's an ongoing battle.
Do you think there's enough goodwill to separate Trump from the American image as of right now?
I think enough people know enough Americans who are humble and thoughtful and care about the world. But, you know, it's that battle is much harder now than it was a couple of years ago.
We actually we spoke last time about that balance between personal and professional humility and how Danish business leaders who are perhaps not used to, you know, sharing with the world how great the thing they're producing is. How do you balance that line without looking like Trump?
Yeah, I know. Well, this is, I think you know it when you're, when this is the, like, decent human beings understand when they are BSing, when they're bullshitting, and when they're actually when they're actually sincere. And I, you know, I mean, not to use the obvious example, but it's, people know when you're lying, I think, and people understand it. When Donald Trump says that his, you know, his, and the audience for his inauguration was twice as big as Barack Obama's, no one believes that unless you are completely and totally brainwashed. So my point, and it's not a great example about marketing, but it's, you know, that's like a sales thing. It's like, look at how great I am. I'm the best president ever. I am the most popular person in the world. Because so look at that. I was at twice as many people as Barack Obama.
I love these annotated fact checks after speeches. Like,
that's like right.
15-page discourse on corrections.
And that's exactly right. Yeah. So I think that it's sincerely selling your product and your business. Or there's that really kind of fine line between sincerity and arrogance. Because you can sincerely sell. This is what I try to do every single day. You can sincerely, passionately sell something that you're a product that you're proud of, or your country, or whatever it may be. But the moment you start lying is the moment I think people start to feel it. I think people start to know. One of the reasons why Donald Trump is as unpopular as he is people know he lies. Yeah. And they don't like it. And they wish he didn't.
Well, let's talk a little bit about mental health and public service.
Yeah,
I'm not a psychologist.
Yeah.
But I can see pretty clearly, and many people have identified that President Trump exhibits all of the characteristics of someone suffering from narcissistic personality disorder.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, do you think that that could be the case? And should there be any checks and balances in place to make sure that someone with so much power, the nuclear football, is not mentally ill?
Yeah, I mean, I can't. I don't want to answer the question because without any psychological, psychiatric training, it would be the wrong thing to do. That being said, I think we do have that check and balance, and that is the American primary system. Meaning, that's what politics is supposed to be, and the fact is he won. So. I think American voters would trust their instincts on people more than they would ever trust any sort of psychological evaluation. Mm. And I don't know that it would matter.
Trump's personal physician who's
which is also hilarious. This is what I mean. Like, if he wasn't president of the United States, that guy with the long hair who we've all seen on, you know, is calling him the healthiest man he's ever met before his entire life. It's like, I see you, Donald Trump. Like, you've never walked even. You just, like, drive around in a golf cart. It's like,
that's what I'm saying.
You
that,
are
that
not.
Is not. That's not mentally normal behavior.
No, I know, but it's hilarious when you're just a reality TV star, right? Yeah. I mean, it's, and then when you have real power, it's such a different brand. I really do think that people understood what they were getting with Donald Trump. They knew who he was, and they knew him actually in some ways better than they had known other presidents because they'd seen him on television as long as they had.
Do you literally think that that's what got him elected? I recognize that name.
Part of it. Yeah, there was And this was something I learned in part of my congressional campaign, and that was that the dislike for Hillary was profound, but it wasn't just about dislike of her as a human being, as a candidate. And it was more than that. It was also about just sort of the establishment. So this idea that we have tried this for years and years and years, and the middle class is shrinking, and the income inequality is growing, and people who've essentially lived a suburban, pretty healthy suburban lifestyle for most of their lives, their lives are getting a little bit worse, and Donald Trump represented some sort of what we would call a Hail Mary, to use an American football term, political option for those people, which is, why not, you know? Mm-hmm. Why not try to elect a businessman who claims he's going to change the way the rules work? And I don't particularly like the racist stuff. I don't particularly like the xenophobic stuff, but let's give it a try. And so that is... You know, that's a real thing. I mean, I think he is. There is something alluring about that that image. That's something new and something fresh. I mean, it's a very, very, he's a remarkably different political candidate than someone like Barack Obama, but it was the same in that they were offering something very, very different than what had been done historically, and that was, I think, what was interesting to people.
So, do you think the American public will go back to the establishment, go back to...
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, it's like and I know, and I will say I feel this way to a certain extent. I don't care as much. This is somewhat ironic coming from, I'll go back and say this. So in 2007, when I decided I was going to work for Barack Obama, I made a very conscious decision that I care more about a visionary leader that represented a future vision than I did about potentially winning. Because at the time, Hillary Clinton was the odds-on favorite, and there was no way the United States of America would elect a black man with the middle name Hussein. Like, that was the sort of conventional wisdom. And, of course, it all went a very good way for me and the country and the world. But it's
Obama did all right as well.
What's that?
Barack. He did okay.
He definitely did, yes. But in this year, I feel very differently. And so if you talk to me about Medicare for All and the Green New Deal and all of these really important, fascinating, forward-leaning political topics, I care less about that. And that's why? Because if you were to tell me that if there was a candidate that supported the Green New Deal and that would make it less likely for that person to beat Donald Trump, I would tell them not to support the Green New Deal, because what I care about is beating Donald Trump. Mm. So I care about a level of yeah. I care about making sure that he does not win next time.
So is the lasting legacy Americans lowering their standards?
Well, maybe, but I don't know that it's necessarily lower standards, because I don't think anyone would say Joe Biden is a lower standard politically.
Sorry, I don't mean for the presidency,
okay.
But rather for the middle class is shrinking, them struggling, going, actually, we're not doing as well as we were, but it could be worse. Trump could be president.
Right. Well, I would say to those very people, listen, first of all, their lives have gotten worse under Donald Trump, not better. So I don't think he has a case to make there. But that being said, listen, even if you are if you are supportive of all the very, very progressive policies that some of the candidates on the debate stage are proposing, that's great. And let's head in that direction. And I would support heading in that direction. But first and foremost, let's make sure that we beat Donald Trump. That again, using an American expression, I think, let's not make the perfect be the enemy of the good. So if you are a hardline progressive, you still have, I mean, in my mind, and a lot of my friends disagree with me on this, but you still need to be excited about Joe Biden. So if he ends up being the nominee, you don't have to be excited about him now, but you need to be excited about him if he ends up being the nominee, because the stakes in this election, I think, are higher than certainly any other any election in my lifetime, and maybe a lot before. It may be decades before that.
I think this is going to make the Democratic primary process much more cordial than perhaps it would be, because people share your view.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I hope so. I don't need it to be cordial. I need it to be constructive. So I don't know that they need to be nice to each other. I think if you to have an intense debate about whether or not Medicare for All should be the law of the land, or whether or not the Green New Deal should be the law of the land, is a really, really vital debate to have inside the Democratic Party. And again, if you look back to the primary debate in 08 and in 07 and 08, that benefited the Democratic Party. And it was a long and nasty primary between Hillary and Obama. I think in the end, what happened was Democratic ideas were being debated so front of every news coverage. And this primary was so heated, but also very constructive. Got a little bit personal, but not too bad. So I think we just kind of keep it that, not going to the place where you're attacked. I haven't been a big fan of some of the attacks leveled on, in particular, Biden.
Yeah.
For sort of policies that I think he's being accused of being somebody who is not, and I don't think that is fair. That being said, I think he does have to answer for his record. So.
Sure.
Yeah.
And if the election were held today, the polls are showing that if in a mock versus Biden and Trump, that independents have swung towards
leading with women. So this is where Donald Trump is a huge problem with women. Huge problem with women.
And why would that be?
Yeah, I know. It's just shocking, right? It's
like, not just in the polls.
Yeah. And independents. So this is the thing.
Women, you can't win with this base alone, right?
No. I mean, God bless women, because women do not like, this is, I'm generalizing massively, but the polling tells you this, they do not like the vulgarity, they don't like the nastiness, they don't like the name calling, they don't like the picking fights.
Yeah.
The women in my family, and the men in my family can't stand him either, but the women in my family find it so vulgar, the way that he talks about other people. I so think women are the moral compass of society, generally speaking, and they don't see a moral compass in him, and you see that reflected in polling. So he has a huge problem with women. He has a huge problem, especially the suburbs. Like, women who are raising families, and married white women are oftentimes they're the consummate swing voter. So they're what we call security voters. That could either mean national security, economic security, whatever that would be. And are turning, just like we saw in 18 in the midterm elections, they are turning on the president politically in a very emphatic way.
So you mentioned last time that divided government is the best model. Are we now so extremely divided inside one country that perhaps that's no longer the case?
I still think divided government is personally, politically, I'd like to see the White House in both chambers of Congress Democrat. But I, taking a step back, that's my own personal preference. But I, as an American, I like the idea. I think divided government is the best way for government to function still. I think if you have a president who's not Donald Trump, you can still make progress, not progress you necessarily want to make, and not move as quickly as you would like to make on issue after issue after issue. But I don't think slow and steady is a bad way to govern. So
how do you guard against another Trump?
Well, it's hard. I mean, this is where I think what's happened, this is a pendulum. Politics is a pendulum, and we've swung really far to the right. And I'm actually concerned about a swing really far back to the left. Even if that might sort of reflect my personal politics more, it's really not about that, because I know that if we swing really far to the left, we're just going to swing back again at some point. Sometimes we have to get the pendulum to just move a little bit slower.
Sure.
I think small steps are better. Now, I will say this, though. I will say that I think to be pushed by the political extremes is not a bad thing. I mean, it's kind of like, look at Denmark. That's what happens here. I mean, it's you have Enhedslisten pushing really hard to the left, Now, their policies will never be implemented because they'll never get the votes, exactly how the purity of their policies, the way that they want them. Yeah. But they have a voice at the table.
And they need that, right?
And they what?
That's required.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I think that they – so it's the same idea,
it's
in essence.
Cognitive diversity.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, like, for example – yeah, Bernie, for example. Bernie in 2016 really brought this idea of universal health, say, universal health care, free education, these kind of Scandinavian social democracy ideas to the political debate in 2016. And now they're somewhat mainstream in the Democratic Party. So, you know, let the progressives, let the people on the far left and the far right influence the conversation and perhaps pull the party one way or the other. I don't think that's a bad thing. But ultimately, I think... again, it goes back to those people, the people who have that level of purity on both sides, need to accept progress for what it is, meaning that a small – maybe if you want to take 8 steps and you're only able to take 2, that's still heading in the right direction. And so you need to acknowledge that for what it is, and I do think that's important.
Well, Rufus, I'm mindful of our time, and I know CNN or BBC is going to want to pull you out of here soon, so We wrote out to some of our audience, to our listeners, that they could write in and ask a couple questions. So I thought we could end the podcast like that.
Sounds good.
So our first one is from Lars, who asks, will you consider moving back to Denmark?
Stephen and I do talk about that sometimes. I hope not. And I say that in this way. I mean, I hope that we're certainly staying home through the next presidential election. And I hope... That brings with it an opportunity to serve my country again in some way. And so that's what I look at. That doesn't mean that we wouldn't continue to come back here as often as we do. I think I'll be here 3 more times this fall. And I will, whatever I'm doing in my life, whether this is paid or unpaid, do what I can to build relations between the U.S. and Denmark. You know, would I love to have an apartment here eventually? Yeah. And
I'm sure a lot of people will love that too.
Well, it would be great fun, but I will see. We'll see. But in the near future, I have lots of work to do back home.
And we've got one more question from, is it pronounced Louisa in this country?
it is.
Who asks, will you be running for Congress again?
I don't know the answer to that, and I'm going to answer that in the same way that I answered the first one, is that right now, when I ran for Congress, as I said, and I meant this, is that this was not about a lifelong desire to be elected official, to be a politician. This was about trying to find a way to serve my country at a time where I thought its politics was very challenged. And I didn't win, and that was hard to take for a time, but I have no regrets, and I feel great about what we did. So after the presidential election, I will kind of reassess.
Did you learn a lot?
I learned a lot about myself, about my country, about the Democratic Party, about how nasty politics is, about how mean people can be. And, you know, it is a tough business, and you have to have a thick skin, and your family needs to have a thick skin. Because it's really hard, and it will kick you and kick you and kick you, and you make no money. You know, so it's
that's the upside.
Yeah, I mean, it's literally it's essentially a volunteer job, unless you win, of course, and then you get a little bit. But it's you have to believe in it with all your heart, and I do. But I don't know if it's me. Like, I just don't know, and so we'll see. I mean, the door is certainly open to it, but it has to be the right opportunity.
Sounds like you'll first reflect after 2020.
That's right. That's right.
Well, before we go, is there anything else you're up to you'd like to promote or tell our audience where they can find you?
You know I'm not shy on social media, so Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, you can find me on all three. I will be coming back in the fall a couple of times. I'm working, in large part, I'm working right now in renewable energy, which is great. And part of my job is to try to bring American capital, American venture capital, to Scandinavia, to try to invest in young, sustainable companies here. And one of the things I realized when I was here was that there's so much innovation and so much entrepreneurship here, but there's, going back to the concept of Jantelov. Marketing is not a Danish strength, and access to capital is not something that there's enough of here. So it's just it's a void I think I can fill. So I'll be doing a good bit of that. I'll be heading to Copenhagen, Oslo in September, and then I'll be back again in November for a variety of different things too. So you'll be seeing me.
Fantastic. Well, you're welcome by anytime to catch up. It's been a true pleasure.
Thanks, guys. Thank you. Pleasure. And pleasure's mine.
I'm still calling you Ambassador Gifford. Yeah. I think you carry the title.
Well, I appreciate that, but you can call me whatever you want.
And to our audience, don't forget to jump over to iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe, share, whatever you can do to help out. And until next time, see you on the GDP.
Studying for an executive MBA at Henley Business School in Denmark is an intense and rewarding experience. If you want to achieve the best possible outcomes in business and in life, we can give you the skills and knowledge you need through the Henley MBA. For more info, visit henley.dk.
Are you getting the most out of your time in Denmark? Pick up your printed copy of the English language newspaper Copenhagen Post today to access relevant news and event information guaranteed to enhance your working and family life.